I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 23rd. And a reminder that President Bush delivers his State of the Union address to Congress and the American people tonight at 8 o'clock our time. We'll carry the address and the Democratic response live here on the Ideas Network. And all morning, tomorrow morning, you'll have an opportunity to react to and discuss what he had to say with a wide variety of guests from different political perspectives. We'll have reaction and analysis all morning long on this program from 6 until 9. Kathleen Dunn will devote at least her 9 o'clock hour to it, and Ben Maron's also in his 4 o'clock hour. So lots of discussion on the state of our union all day tomorrow here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we'll discuss the role of the internet in presidential politics. Over the weekend, more candidates emerged announcing their intentions on their campaign websites, including this announcement from Senator Hillary Clinton.
I announced today that I'm forming a presidential exploratory committee. I'm not just starting a campaign, though. I'm beginning a conversation with you, with America, because we all need to be part of the discussion if we're all going to be part of the solution.
She followed Barack Obama, who made his internet announcement last Tuesday.
As many of you know, over the last few months, I've been thinking hard about my plans for 2008. Running for the presidency is a profound decision, and that's why I want to tell you first that I'll be filing papers today to create a presidential exploratory committee.
And John Edwards announced his campaign on YouTube a couple of weeks ago. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson used his website over the weekend. We have a clip of that, but the audio quality is kind of shaky, so I'm not going to play that. Why are the candidates using the internet to make these announcements? And how else are they using the web, or will they use the web to assist their campaigns? And does this make any difference to all of us? How will the internet shape the race for the White House? We'll talk about it this hour with our guest and welcome your thoughts and questions. And I'm curious if you're getting more and more of your political information from the internet, as opposed to, say, the mainstream media. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And if you're internet savvy, you might as well send an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Our guest is a professor of journalism and mass communications at UW-Madison who specializes in political communication and the internet. He is Dietram Schäufele, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why is everyone seemingly using the internet to announce their presidential candidacy?
I think what candidates have noticed over the course of the last two election cycles is that the internet is not just a great tool to reach very important voters, meaning younger voters and more politically savvy voters, but it's also a very important tool for fundraising. And Howard Dean and John McCain have really shown that that it's possible to fundraise even outside of the traditional party structure, and that's something that's very important during primaries.
Now, you say all of us have heard certainly about Howard Dean's success in fundraising using the internet, but that, of course, didn't follow through with the success for his candidacy.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Howard Dean made one mistake, and that was not the infamous scream, but the one mistake that he made was that he did not pair his strategy of fundraising online with matching that up with lining his efforts up with those of the Democratic Party. So in other words, the Democratic Party was really putting their money on other candidates, Gephardt and Kerry at the time, and that does not work out in the primaries where you need the party structure setting up each state as you move through the early stages of the primary for you. So if you move from state to state, the party needs to really prepare the next state for you. And Howard Dean was just not part of that of those efforts on the Democratic side. So that was his problem. His problem was definitely not on the online campaigning side.
Yeah, you say John McCain is also quite adept at this.
John McCain, when he started the Real Talk Express and when he started his campaign in 2000 and 2004, his campaigns in 2000 and 2004, was really very good at fundraising online. And people forget this now, but that's how he started his campaigns on the Republican side.
Yeah, I guess I recall some of those examples from the last campaign. I didn't know much about John McCain using the internet, but it's just one after another. It seems mainly the Democratic candidates using their websites or the internet in some way to announce their candidacy. First of all, is it mainly the Democrats or are the Republicans doing this too?
I think that Democrats are overall better at it. The Republicans certainly in the last two election cycles were a little bit unusual for the Republicans in 2000, obviously. George Bush did not rely as much on the internet, had the endorsement from Republican governors so early on, even before he declared. So that was for him a very traditional campaign. And then in 2004, that was certainly a re-election campaign where he didn't have to go through the primaries. And where he was the sitting president, so that was very different. But he actually had, for a Republican, a very strong web presence. His web manager in 2004 was one of the first Republicans who ended up creating these online communities that we're now seeing on Hillary Clinton's website and others as well. But having said this, from the Republican side, there's certainly the Democrats are not just better at it, it's also more important for them. And the reason why it's more important for them is that they rely much more on a younger constituency, which tends to go Democratic when they do go out and vote. And that's a critical rather than when.
We'll talk more about that after we check weather. We're talking about the role of the internet in presidential politics and in the race for the White House, with more than a handful of candidates using the internet just in the last couple of weeks, announcing their candidacy for president. We are welcoming your thoughts and questions about this for our guest, who is an expert in political communication and the internet. Professor Dietram Scheufele is a professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 18 minutes now past 7 o'clock. Hoping you'll join in our discussion this hour on politics and the internet and the role the internet will play in the race for president in 2008. As you probably heard over the weekend, Senator Hillary Clinton and New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson were the latest two to use their campaign websites to announce their intention to run for president. We are wondering why this is happening more and more often and what it will do to shape or change the nature of the 2008 presidential campaign. Does this matter to you in any way? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. And again, I'm hoping to hear whether you are depending more and more on the internet and campaign websites or maybe blogs or internet news sites for your political information, as opposed to mainstream media. But let me ask you before we go to the phones, Professor Scheufele, you had mentioned that this is a way to reach out to the younger, tech-savvy voters, but those younger voters often tend to vote Democratic, so it seems like it's a wise move for the Democrats in particular, but they don't necessarily vote. So is this a way to try to encourage more young people to vote?
I think that's part of it, but for the Democrats, it's critical, and I think Bill Clinton has demonstrated this very very clearly that if the Democrats want to win the presidency, they have to win it with constituencies and voters that the Republicans fail to reach, and those are sometimes racial minorities, but those are certainly also younger voters who traditionally do not turn out to vote, and this is the study after study shows that these voters are impossible to reach with traditional news outlets. Those are not the news outlets that they turn to. If they turn to traditional outlets, then it's maybe for Jon Stewart, and even that is hard to do. So this is really an important tool for them to reach out and to get their information out, to put it out there and make it available. And then it depends, of course, on the individual candidate to mobilize those segments, which some Democrats have not done very well at all, and like John Kerry, for instance, who split the youth vote pretty much with George Bush and Bill Clinton, on the other hand, who was very successful.
Do the candidates this time around who are announcing on the internet, do they in any way run the risk of turning off the traditional older voter by depending or using the internet so much?
I don't think that's really the case. I do think it's important for them to supplement certainly their online strategies with traditional strategies and really go through the party structure, make sure that they're well embedded in the party structure and also in the traditional media structure. And that goes back a little bit to what we talked about earlier with Howard Dean, who relied exclusively almost on the internet and fundraising through the internet and really felt that he could go around the way primaries were usually run in the Democratic Party and get elected that way, and that didn't work out for him. And I think that's a lesson to be learned for all candidates, that it's that the internet is part of the story, but it's certainly not the one tool that will help you win an election.
We have our lines full right now, so let me take some calls. Paulette in Mazomanie is first. Hi, Paulette.
Hi there. I don't use the internet a lot, but I use it almost every day for email, and I look at the news every day. And I guess I'd like you to explain in real simple terms how you hear them announce this on the internet, where you actually go, in a very simple, straightforward way. I mean, I know how to go to each website. I guess I would just put in HillaryClinton.com or something like that. I really don't know exactly how you access hearing them and continuing in the future. How do you access what will be said? Just explain it real simply.
That's interesting. I think it illustrates that not everybody is tech savvy as everyone else, Professor Scheufele.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It shows that, but it also shows, and I think Paulette has a very good point, mm-hmm. it also shows that there are very, very different ways, or many different ways, in which people announce in different places where they announce. I think the best starting point, ironically, is YouTube.com, the video site that was just bought up for $1.6 billion. And what a lot of candidates are doing, or what a lot of citizens are doing, is they're putting footage up of announcements on YouTube, and candidates themselves put them up and then link from their websites to YouTube. So if you go to YouTube.com and you type in candidate names, you will see a lot of different clips ordered very often by the date in which they've been posted, with candidate statements and debates and announcements and so on. So I think that's a very good starting point to find some of these things of announcements. And then certainly the candidate websites are a second good place to find those. As I said, a lot of those link directly to YouTube. The tricky part with the candidate websites, obviously, is that there's so many websites that are unofficial websites, it's important to make sure that you do find the official website of Hillary Clinton, or if it's Obama or somebody else.
Yeah, let me take another caller. I was going to follow up on that, but Gordon in Milwaukee's been waiting. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Let me just start this by saying the first presidential candidate I worked for was Gene McCarthy, but I wasn't old enough to vote for him because I wasn't 21.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little older voter, but I depend heavily on the internet because I like to get my news. I think in the Milwaukee area, I mean, there's not a lot of news on political candidates. You get a 30-second blurb on the local stations, maybe, and you don't get much more on the national stations. Journal Sentinel doesn't carry much political news at all. I get it from the New York Times, I get it from the Washington Post, maybe Slate.com, but I get a lot of my political news from traditional media off the internet, mm-hmm. and I don't really trust bloggers because I don't think they're not very transparent and they can put anything up without verification and fact checking. So I'm not real much into bloggers.
Yeah, Professor Scheufele?
Yeah, and I think that's an important distinction, a very important distinction. And Gordon kind of mentioned three different groups of news outlets, and that's really kind of how the news environment breaks out right now. The traditional, newspapers and traditional news outlets, television, and so on. And he's absolutely right that at the local level, very often there's a limited proportion of the news whole that's devoted to political news. And then the online, and a lot of people are turning to those, the online websites of, or online websites of traditional news sources, so the New York Times website, rather than subscribing to the print copy, the Washington Post website, and so on. And then the third group are bloggers, and I think Gordon Summery was also right on target here. The problem with those, and it's the advantage and the disadvantage of those news outlets, is that they're highly partisan, that they're that they don't adhere to journalistic rules of fact checking and of really following certain types of journalistic norms. And as I said, that's an advantage to a certain degree, because certainly certain audience members are looking for that, but it also helps them to push certain issues that traditional news outlets didn't push. And that, in the 2004 election, that was certainly an issue with George Bush's military service and CBS News, for instance, where blogs pushed that issue when traditional news outlets had dropped it. But the disadvantage of that certainly is if you treat that very naively, and I think that's the point that Gordon was making, that I think is a very important one, if you consider those traditional news outlets, you're making the mistake that you're assuming that they're giving you news, and they're not. They're giving you opinion, and they're giving you spin, and very intentionally so.
I wanted to get your reaction, Professor, to what one Democratic activist said, that the Internet is for Democrats today what talk radio was for Republicans 10 years ago, saying that this new media is much more important to us because conservatives have been more dominant in the traditional media.
Let me address the second part of your question first. Are conservatives more dominant in the traditional media? That's an interesting statement, and I would disagree with that. In communication, there's a fairly simple explanation for people's perceptions of media bias, and that's called the hostile media effect. And the hostile media effect is one of the most stable phenomena we have in communication research. And what it says is, it says that if you're a strong partisan, you will always see the media as biased as opposed to your own viewpoint. Mm-hmm. So if you're a liberal, you will think there's a conservative bias, and if you're a conservative, you will think there's a liberal bias. And it really doesn't matter much what is in the media, really, as far as content is concerned. And that's a fairly stable phenomenon, and it works on both sides. So every conservative you will ask will say, well, there's a strong liberal media bias in every liberal. And so, you know, having said this, I think there's certainly a conservatives have been better at using media for their own purposes. And Frank Luntz, who just actually this month came out with a new book on how to frame the message for the Republicans, has done this very successfully now for two election cycles. The Democrats are now trying to catch up, and George Lakoff is trying to do the same thing. Framing means that it doesn't matter what you say, it matters how you say it. So, for instance, what we talk about the death tax, or what we talk about the estate tax. So the labeling of the issue alone would change the interpretation that people have of the issue. And there are countless examples of this over the course of the last 8 years. And it's just that the conservatives have been much better at it, and have done this so much more eloquently, for better and for worse. Having said that, I do think that the Democrats have a real opportunity here as far as the Internet is concerned in targeting their constituencies. We talked about this a little bit earlier. But I think that's really the only part of it. I don't think there is any conservative bias in the traditional news outlets. I simply think that the Republicans have used them more successfully.
I got you. We're going to hold the conversation for now as we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then lots more to talk about as we discuss the role of the Internet in the race for the White House. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36, and we're talking this hour about the Internet, the role of the Internet in politics, and how it's going to shape or maybe change the nature of the 2008 presidential campaign. Lots of candidates announced just over the weekend their intention to run for president using their campaign websites, including Hillary Clinton and Bill Richardson, Barack Obama, the week before. We're talking about the internet and how it's shaping politics and wondering what questions and comments you have. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Dietram Scheufele, professor of journalism and mass communication at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, who specializes in political communication and the internet. And I'm wondering, we talked a little bit in our first half hour about how candidates might certainly want to do this to reach out to younger voters and maybe politically and technically savvy voters, and that it's a useful fundraising tool. But I'm wondering, Professor, if this is also a way for candidates to, how do I put this, control the message, that they'll be able to put their announcement on their website or use the internet in this way and not have to deal with those pesky questions by reporters or the like.
Sure, and it is. So the answer is yes, but it's a very double-edged sword. It's certainly possible for candidates all of a sudden to go around traditional media channels. Usually the political communication process is a two-step process where the candidates talk to the media and the media then disseminate the message to audiences. And with these new forms of communication, it's very possible for a candidate to go straight to the audience. And traditionally, that was only possible through campaign advertising. Now it's possible through putting clips on YouTube, through having conversations online, as Hillary Clinton does, putting press releases online, emailing people directly, and a lot of people are on candidates' email lists and so on. So there certainly is the possibility of doing that. The problem with that is that it's a very double-edged sword. So, in other words, every other candidate can do the exact same thing, and can talk about you online. And I think Mitt Romney, for instance, when he declared, he found that out the hard way shortly after he had announced his candidacy, or at least that he was thinking about his candidacy, rather, there were clips of him and Edward Kennedy in a 1994 debate floating around, where he had taken fairly liberal stances on things like gay marriage or gay rights, at least, and abortion rights, and certainly he has moved very much to the right as he was preparing for his presidential race. But all of a sudden, these clips were floating around, and Democrats, of course, were doing their best to promote those and showing him, if not as a flip-flopper, then at least as close to one as possible. So you know, what works in favor of a candidate can also very much work against the candidate, and I think we'll see more and more of that, YouTube clips and other things, and people have labeled this already explicitly the YouTube effect. That you will have to react to as a candidate.
Right, and producer Leo Duran just reminded me that the internet and YouTube was no friend of George Allen, who's not running for president, in part because of that posted video of him calling the cameraman Macaca.
That is exactly. That was probably the best example that all of these things are not speculations, but that they have very clear and very measurable outcomes for political campaigns. That was certainly one of the more poorly ran campaigns as a result of having to deal with that one moment that was taken on a cellular phone.
Next, we will go to Jim in Stoughton. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Great show. And you kind of just mentioned the other part of my what I was going to say is that, the controlling of the message works both ways also. It's a point-of-sale control. This is where they're getting your money. You have high-speed internet. Those people typically have money to give you, and they have the means to move money around on their computers. Also, this is also a mean for the handlers, for the political people who have hitched their star to, say, Hillary Clinton, who's running, I think, is honestly one of the most tenured decisions in history politically. But anyway, that they can then go to Hillary Clinton or whoever the candidate is and tell them what they want to hear. Tell them to run. Look at all these people that want you to run. Look at this opinion. And they can kind of steer the candidate using the information that they're so carefully getting. It's like push-polling the easy way. You don't have to call anybody. I'd just like to hear what you say on that. Thanks. Great show.
Thank you.
Sure, and I think that's an excellent point that Jim is making, and it highlights one thing that's actually even a broader point than this, and that is that the internet allows you to make very selective perceptions, and that works both on the audience side and certainly on the campaign side. So Jim was referring to the handlers that can pick and choose and kind of take information that they see online and then feed to their candidates and say, this is what you should do. And that certainly has always been a problem with campaigns, also in traditional media outlets, where people get these little clips in the morning from news outlets, and candidates get those and then form their perceptions of reality based on that very small snapshot of media reality, and that certainly can be exacerbated by the internet. But more importantly, a point I think that's very important about this, and a broader point, is that for audiences, and this goes also back to, I think, one of the very first questions we had from one of the callers, for audiences, where do you turn for political news? And it's very easy online to be very selective. So in other words, you only turn to websites or to blogs that tend to reinforce your own political views. It's much easier to do that online than it is to do that for newspapers or for television, where you tend to be much more exposed to both sides of the issue. So that's a cautionary note, I think, for audiences as well, as they do go online and look for political news and for campaign news. There are many more partisan sources that certainly don't show both sides of the issue, don't even link to the other side of the issue. And that's one thing to be aware of, and as far as online literacy, if you will.
Thank you very much, Jim, for the call. Next, we go to Tom in Wausau. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Very good show. My point is I'm not a Democrat or a Republican, but what really helps me out is when you have these blogs and when you have this negative news and stuff like that, you can go right to the presidential libraries and check what's happening in the following years. And as these things come up, you can find a lot of answers right in the presidential libraries, where they actually started from, and whether they're lies or whether they're just trying to push something forward and get their own agenda across. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think that's a very important aspect of it. When the internet first emerged, a lot of people were talking about and calling it a new information commonwealth. And they were saying, this is for the first time in history, really, that we have, you know, true democracy. And we have true democracy in two ways. The first one is that for the first time, people can talk to people in any way possible. So technically, it would be possible, or theoretically, it would be possible for 300 million Americans to talk to each other in chat rooms and exchange their views on all these different issues. But the second part is, and that's the important part that you talk about, is you can go online and you can find any piece of information that you would like to find and verify it virtually immediately, and see if it's accurate or if it really matches up with what historically has been true. Now that's the ideal scenario. The problem is that few people, just simply based on the studies that have been done, few people really use it the way that Thomas described. So a lot of people do not go and go to the presidential library and check these facts. A lot of people do turn to partisan blogs really for talking points more than anything else. So in reality, it's not always like that, but it's certainly the normative setup is that, and that's the nice part of the internet.
Yeah, and we have an email from Michael in Phoenix, Arizona, who listens to us over the internet, and he wonders what your thoughts are on how internet radio will affect campaigns. He listens to us on the net, and he said he did mm-hmm. this a lot too during Howard Dean's in 2003. Any thoughts on internet radio and how that plays into all this?
Sure, I think internet radio is important. I'm not sure, and I hate to say it on your show, I'm not quite sure how important
my
it is
feelings in, won't be hurt
in terms of live radio. But it's I think it's getting bigger and bigger in terms of podcasts. And that comes back again to what we talked about earlier, you know, what people's lifestyles are like and more technically savvy audiences. So people who commute, people who you know, have very specific blocks in their day devoted to, let's say, working out and who download shows. And actually public radio is one of the front runners here, mm-hmm. Making their shows available as podcasts. People download them to their iPods and to other MP3 devices and then listen to them at their convenience throughout the day. So I do think that'll be more and more important, and I certainly do the same thing listening to a lot of public radio shows from all across the country, including Wisconsin, obviously, and on my iPod at my convenience as I travel in the car.
Yep, and you can do that too. Go to our website, wpr.org, and find out more about that. We are talking about how the internet is shaping, what role it will play in the race for the White House, how websites and podcasts and blogs will shape the race. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our discussion prompted by a number of candidates just over the weekend, maybe most of the candidates in the race so far, making their announcements on the internet, on their own campaign websites or on YouTube, or using the internet to fundraise and announce and to share information, to reach out to younger voters, to technically savvy voters. Our guest is Dietram Scheufele, professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, who specializes in political communication and the internet. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, about 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about how the internet is influencing politics and how the candidates who are announcing that they're running for president are announcing on their websites and on the internet. Our next caller is Art in Appleton. Hello, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning to your guest.
Morning.
Morning.
I have a little different approach to keeping current with issues, and by that I mean what I do is I keep current with the issue, not the person. And all you need to really do that is Google, which, of course, is free. And you can just simply set a Google alert, and you can go in, and it will every time your keywords that you've entered, like I've been following the voter ID issue closely, and a good one that we should be keeping on is the Social Security totalization agreement with Mexico. And if all you have to do is type those keywords in to where Google tells you to set up your alert, and every day you'll get a whole page of headlines from all the various sources that they could be liberal, they could be conservative, they might be bloggers, but you see the names of who's in there. But it's a good opportunity to for people to kind of be exposed to both sides of the issues, and it really is thought provoking. And a good opportunity to do that, and a good way to keep track of issues more so than people. And of course, the people that, if they're discussing an issue, they're going to pop up in those articles too.
Yep, I think that's a very important point, and one thing that we haven't brought up. There's one spin-off of that as well, and that is customized news sites. So portals, and Google offers that as well. Yahoo offers that. So these are news sites where you can put little. Elements that are based on these customized news searches. So when you open your web browser in the morning, all these news sites would really pop up together on one single news portal where you could then look at all these things together and click from those, which is just a spin-off of the idea that Art outlined. But that's a very important point.
Yeah, and Art, I don't think Art will be insulted if I say he certainly doesn't sound like an 18-year-old novice voter here either. So this is something that maybe crosses generational lines, Professor?
Absolutely, yeah. No, I think this is one way or the other. This is the internet is a phenomenon that's here to stay, and it's here to stay across demographic groups.
Yeah. Let me ask you on one of the the negative side of this. We talked a little bit about how a candidate can make a snafu and have it posted on the internet for all to see. But then there's also a candidate who doesn't necessarily make a mistake, but is somehow lied about on a blog or some sort of internet site. And I almost hesitate to bring this up, but the most recent controversy that I heard about was as soon as Barack Obama announced his candidacy, all sorts of emails and internet blogs and different things were talking about his religious upbringing and whether or not he, was raised in a radical Muslim school, and it was kind of ugly stuff.
Yeah, and that is the part of that double-edged sword that I was talking about earlier. And I think the important part for audiences to understand is really that a lot of the things that are floating around on the internet, with the exception of traditional news sites, do not adhere to traditional journalistic values, and there is a role for journalism as the fourth estate in this country, and especially in all democracies for that matter. And it is, and that's important for a whole range of reasons. Number one is there's a very clear constitutional protection for journalism, and that's not because journalists are special, but it's because they play a special role in the political process, because they adhere to certain rules of gathering evidence, finding evidence, and presenting evidence, and rumors are not part of that. The internet is different. A blog and a blogger can do whatever they please in terms of putting up information. They don't claim to be journalistic. And so I think it's very important for audiences, and I'm confident that this will happen more and more, that audiences develop a sense of online literacy. So the ability to distinguish between what is a traditional news site, what is a traditional journalist, what is a traditional news outlet, and which ones are partisan sources, partisan blogs, and so on. Now, the problem is that right now that is not working so well, and audiences are not necessarily making that distinction. A lot of these issues are discussed, are out there, are floating around, and some of them stick every so often. So I do think that's something that we need to come to grips with as a society, and also that political audiences really need to learn.
Thanks again to Art. Annalisa in Green Bay is with us now. Hi, Annalisa.
Well, that was my question, too. We've talked a lot about the fundraising potential and the marketing of the candidate, but this whole issue of how do we inform ourselves about issues, because it seems to me in the last election, I was dismayed to think that most people were getting their information from these 30-second or 20-second sound bites about the candidates, and that's just not sufficient. I do want to put in a plug for another public radio program on the media. I'm a big fan of that, and I've learned a lot about media literacy from that program. So if people aren't familiar with it, I suggest you tune in. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
You want to talk more about how will this change how we discuss issues, the Internet?
Yeah. Mm. The tricky part about that is and is really that the political audience, and this is going to come out very cynical, but it's based on a lot of evidence on presidential elections and non-presidential elections, is that the political audience really falls into different groups. And there is a group of people and voters who are very interested and who are very involved in the political process, who seek out information, who want to be informed on the issues. Then, of course, a large group of people who never vote. Even in a very, very close election like the last one, a large proportion of the American public never voted. And then there is, of course, the middle group of people who don't really care all that much. They care about maybe one issue, but they don't really care all that much. And we had in the last election, which is, to me, for example, very surprising, we had at least a sizable proportion of the public who 2-4 weeks before the election still weren't sure if they were going for Kerry or for Bush. So these are people who are not as politically involved and who do go for the 30-second ads that Annalise mentioned, and who are influenced by those. So I think it's important for us to understand when we think about the effects of the Internet that there is not one audience, that there are different audiences. Some people are very interested. They want to find out everything about the issues. They do go online, and others don't really care all that much. Elections for them are not the most important thing, and they tend to make up their mind based on what we in communication call heuristics. So the way a candidate looks, as funny as that sounds, does make a difference. If the candidate is male or female, why have we never had a female president? So gender is a heuristic that people use when they make a decision about how viable a candidate is. Race, they certainly use as one. Or how a candidate speaks, what he or she talks about is an important heuristic. So it's not all about information. I think that's an important, as unfortunate as that is, but in reality, unfortunately, that's the case.
Yeah, I'm looking at a Democratic political strategist saying that this is an incredible phenomenon. Nobody has quite figured out how to master it, but everyone wants to be a part of it, meaning the Internet.
Sure.
Are the candidates using the Internet well? They're using it, but are they using it well?
I think they're beginning to use it well. I think different candidates have used different parts of it well, and it's up to one candidate at some point to put together a coherent strategy. And Giuliani just hired George Bush's 2004 webmaster, who I mentioned earlier, who is very good at really building one of the first online communities for the Republicans. So people, these are the first hires that people are making now on their campaign staff. Very early on, and for Giuliani certainly very early on. And I do think that Giuliani will have a fairly prominent campaign and has a fairly good chance in the Republican primary. So maybe we'll see one example here of somebody who is capable of putting it all together.
Yeah. And just finally, the one other concern that I saw voiced was whether this is ignoring the working class or the lower class or people who maybe aren't glued to their computers.
I think it is to some degree, and this is again where the political cynicism, or cynicism is the wrong word, but the realities of political mm-hmm. campaigning come in, and that is political campaigns are targeted at the 50% of the population who traditionally turn out to vote. They're not targeted at the other half, simply because that for many campaign strategists is considered a waste of money. Again, as unfortunate as that is.
Well, it was an interesting discussion. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dietram Scheufele, professor of journalism and mass communication at UW-Madison, who specializes in political communication and the Internet. We thank him for being with us, and we thank Leo Duran for producing this hour. If you'd like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, you can call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444. Or you can go to our website. We archive all of our talk shows on our website. You can also, if you're a member, I believe, download our program. So all that information on our website, WPR.org, WPR.org. A reminder that we will be carrying live coverage of President Bush's State of the Union address starting at 8 o'clock tonight, followed by the Democratic response. And we'll talk all about it tomorrow morning here on the Ideas Network.